Intended topic and in a traditional way. Before going to the topic traditional, if anyone is having any other special question or any special topic or any other idea, I would like to take a few minutes for that before going to the appointed topic.
Asarai Bante.
Yeah.
And Niranja here.
Yeah.
Bante, we have received two questions for today's session.
Yeah. You may proceed, please.
Yes, Bante. This question actually received last week, but there was no time to present it.
Uh-huh.
I'm presenting it today.
Good.
Avasarai Bante, this is a statement related to sermon last week morning. I can see that the more I'm mindful, the power that the observed object has over me transfers to the observing nature gradually being formulated as the practice moves forward. However, the process is not linear and it is not a process that I can predict nor control. The part of the brain or the mind that implements this function is itself working on its own, and its advancement or depreciation over time is not within perfect control. However, it must be said that once the observing ability moves beyond critical mass and becomes autonomous or seems to become so, it is unstoppable and has a mind of its own. Almost as if Dhamma itself has deep rooted within the mind. May the Bante and all in the audience receive infinite blessings of the Triple Gem. End of the report, Bante.
Yeah, it need no any kind of answering. It's a statement. So statement is based upon the assumption things must be under my control. It has been disproved. So therefore he is lamenting. I thought it is under situation controlling, but I understand it is not under control. But it is not a regrettable kind of a report, just reporting, that's a part only I can appreciate. But still I see the immaturity, I see the necessity for the continuity. Please live up to that point with the new values, new likings and dislikings, just acceptance. So this is halfway through acceptance, halfway not. The words used and the presentation used, halfway still regretting, things are not under my control, and still say my mind, my thinking, my base. So nothing happened, your base is being dissolved, base loses its boundaries, that's the part you can't forbear, that's the part you can't comprehend. Your language can't comprehend, your rational mind can't comprehend, your inferential knowledge can't comprehend, your deductive knowledge can't comprehend. So far we all are keeping the inferential knowledge and the deductive knowledge as the supreme. But day by day when you are practicing, it disproves by itself. So you are losing the argument, you are losing the theme, you are losing the benchmark, you are losing the pivotal point, you are losing the center. Very difficult to express in letters, express in language. But lucky, we try our best to communicate which is not communicable. So therefore, safely I can advise, if at all advices are necessary, please continue with this, and that is we call new livelihood. This is the paradigm shift. This is the new way of thinking. Please continue and share with us.
Yes, Bante, the second report. Sitting. Primary object, rising and falling, is very subtle. Most prominent is strong energetical movement inside the head, as if energy fields were being pushed around. After 5-10 minutes of thinking or of being with the energy perception, I fall into unconsciousness for 10 minutes or longer. Thereafter, I try to start anew, but lose awareness again very soon. Keeping the eyes open also doesn't help. After many weeks putting up with this dynamic, I found that this situation is disheartening and makes me generally listless and robs energy. I decided to stop sitting for 10 days or so and to do walking only. After one day without sitting, I wasn't happy with the decision and started to make 10 minutes sitting, as this is about the time I can stay conscious. During these short sittings, first I connect with the primary object, which is rising, falling. It is very subtle, so sometimes not precisable at all. Sometimes I can feel subtle whole body breathing instead. But the awareness goes into intense energetical activity in the head, strongest in the forehead. Sometimes able to follow it very closely for a while. Sometimes I'm able to take the path which in the past has allowed me to transcend this kind of energetical activity and to go beyond, which feels like another dimension. But I am not able to put this into practice much at the moment. After about 1 week of this experiment, sometimes I can sit little longer than 10 minutes without losing awareness, and I hope to further extend these sittings, provided I can stay conscious. Respected Bhante, please advise how I can come back to a more proper sitting practice. Walking. I walk at least 4 times a day for 1 hour. More is sometimes not possible due to leg injuries. I note left-right, but often thinking takes over, more tendentially, less than in earlier months. I feel the soles touching the ground and enjoy the sensation. I have to walk more gently and smoothly due to the injuries. This is not natural, but I appreciate it, find it calming and relaxing. I feel the soles, then the whole body, and enjoy the relaxation. I feel tightness at the sole plexus. This is unpleasant. I take a few deeper breaths, wishing to open it up. Then remember that I shouldn't manipulate during formal meditation and simply observe the tightness, glad to be aware of it now. Sometimes there are distractions around to which I react by looking. Altogether, it's rather relaxing and healing experience, sometimes also boring. This morning, I concentrated on the sound of silence while walking. Then I can't listen to my thoughts at the same time. Respected Bhante, please, can you give feedback and advice? Thank you very much. Therwan Saranai. End of the report, Bhante.
I will try to cite an example, hoping that will help release this situation. It's a communication problem. You know, there is a disease called epilepsy. People all of a sudden fall and get all the breathing tracks and the talking, everything blocks by the phlegm and completely collapse. So one doctor came and gave a lecture in the Subodharama. He told some people knows that I am in epilepsy. Some people completely do not know. He is completely unconscious. So he says if he is unconscious, it is recoverable. If he is conscious, he is cheating. That is a mental disease. It is incurable. So therefore, you have to, before treating, you have to understand while you are in the epilepsy, unconscious, how do you call epileptic?
Fit.
Are you aware of it? If you are aware, you are cheating. Incurable. But epileptic fit can happen. Either you may die, but you completely forgotten. That is curable. So likewise in meditation, as far as you know that I do not know, that we still you exist. You say that 10 minutes you don't know what you are aware that you are completely lost, you are completely asleep, you don't know. But still I exist. So one day if you understand properly, if I am correct, if you are ready to accept what I am telling, you will go into that completely, you are no more. So your whole report is to re-establish yourself, re-establish ego, building the broken ego and try to keep the ego sustainability. UN is nowadays talking about the sustainable development. They need not any development. They want to have the sustainability. This is the science. Buddha says there is no sustainable thing. Everything is just man-made. So therefore expect that is non-self. Difficult. We are in Satipatthana also. We are learning and appreciating, sometimes recommending sustainable development, not to killing the environment and the society, the atmosphere, but to have the development with such, and then no development. But the West is killing, burning all the fuel, digging all the heavy materials. And this is, we are not worrying about the carbon trade, and this is nonsense. Maybe utter nonsense, we don't know. Whatever it may be, in meditation, you are slowly, slowly losing your ego, and your report is trying your utmost effort to reinstall ego. When you have difficulty in the crippling, in the walking, that's a very clear indication of the weakness of your ego. You try to patch it up. You try to patch it up what is losing the consciousness. So therefore, one day, you have to have the preparedness of your mindset. Before sitting, there may be some thought moments, not only unconscious, even awareness is not there. So that experience you can't claim as me, mine and myself, and difficult to put into letters, words. I accept it, but that is what we have to communicate through the communicable language. So therefore meditators can understand within 10 minutes you can go into that. It's not a big, long journey, but the thing is acceptance. Even if it happens, even you are a Buddhist, even you are with the correct view, you always try to reinstall yourself. That is the ignorance. That is because of the desire. But that ignorance, that desire, you can see under the light of mindfulness. That is the purpose of my talking now. So next time, try to do the same thing. But don't try to patch it up. Don't try to do patchwork. You see the old ceramic vases, they have cracks. More cracks, more they become old. Antique. They become more antique, valuable. But the ones broken, ones fallen down, that these are the cracks they are going to shatter off. So, going to pieces without, that's a one book, Daniel Goleman, falling apart. Going to pieces without falling apart. So, your report is going to pieces. Without falling apart, you try to recoherent, make it fix, make it your for complete ego, so that your effort is utterly in waste. But you have done it in a very craftful way. Listen again, really understand how much you are re-establish ego. Every experience is denying it. Every experience is disproving it. But you, your best way, using your English and the grammar and your presentation, everything, trying to reinstall ego. So that is the what giving us also some kind of Dhamma. We are thankful. We are also doing the same mistake. So whenever we do, our friends must understand and help us to tell going to pieces without falling apart. We think going to pieces is always falling apart. It is not. You see, water become evaporated. Evaporated, still they exist. Again, they can congeal and become water. Again, they can be rectified. So likewise, you can be centered ego, egocentric, or even if it is scattered, the so-called ego, it is a falsified concept, that again it can come together and again dissolve. Again come together and it dissolve. your part, you are very, very threatened. You are very, very disturbed when it is going apart. But it is, even though it is going to pieces, not falling apart. So then only you can live on the earth. Otherwise, you are trying to live. You are dreaming. You are fantasizing. I hope I am not nastily critical you. I am happy that you are put into words. But I have something to say. That is to say, go with that prepared mindset. Don't try to re-establish the broken away pieces and try to see even without pieces, without even if it is going to pieces, not fallen apart or not, experience is contented. Contentment is there. So therefore you can experience something beyond yourself that you can do while you are living, not after the death. So therefore that message is there in your report. I hope I did something constructively. So we are happy to listen from you time to time.
Those are the two reports, Bhante.
Okay, then we have taken about 10-20 minutes. So seeing that there are no more remarks, I would like to invite Venerable Buddharakkhita and to present the today's text to the discussion and to proceed the discussion, please. Yesterday, last week also we did it. You were not there, so we did two stanzas.
All right, I heard you weren't.
Yeah, that is what. You were here, but no, the message has not gone to you. But we got together.
All right, okay.
Without the speaker, we run the parliament. No harm. We appointed the assistant speaker. Chandrata Nahur appointed him as the assistant speaker. So can you give me a hint? Kanda. Satang asatang. So we have completed the Kalavivada. We have now go to what is the sutta? We have Purabeda finished. We went to the Kalahavivada and four stanzas, first four.
So that's the question and answer.
Yeah, yeah. It is a question by question. According to the answer, he is phrasing a question. You have to start. Chandon lokasmin koto nidana, vinicheyo chapi koto pahuta, kodo mosa vagga vajjancha katha katancha, ye chapi dhamma samanena vutta. Chandonu lokasmin kuto nidana. The desire started from what? That's a fourth.
From what in the world does desire originate? And from what do judgments too arise? And anger, false speech, and perplexity, and those other things the ascetic has mentioned. Desire originates based on what they say is pleasant or unpleasant in the world. Having seen the vanishing and coming to be of forms, a person forms a judgment in the world. Anger, false speech, and perplexity, these things too arise, that dyad exists. One perplexed should train on the path of knowledge, having known the ascetic stated these things. So again, here the Buddha is beginning, he's taking desire as the question here is being formulated by the Buddha to the psychic form of the Buddha, or the psychic Buddha is asking the real Buddha, what is the origination of desire? So here again is the pointing to the second noble truth, but it is also a link into the dependent origination. So we'll see that the subsequent stanzas in this sutta is an elucidation of dependent origination. So here the Buddha is combining the Four Noble Truths and dependent origination into his teaching. And so here we're dealing with the origination of desire, and from what do judgments to arise? So the Buddha answers that they originate from again, what we would call Vedana Nupassana, that it is this inability to distinguish between pleasant and unpleasant feeling arising in the world. Having seen the vanishing and coming to be of forms, a person forms a judgment. So in this case, the person experiences the arising and passing away in a form and then makes a judgment about it because of improper attention, because of a lack of an inability to kind of just see the arising and passing away as a flux, as a continuum of experience, but instead settles on one aspect of that arising and passing away, namely that it is either pleasant or unpleasant. And once that attribute has been given to the experience of that phenomena, so the object is experienced, and that the Buddha is going to explain in subsequent verses that the cascade of events around the experience. So we'll learn later on because of contact. So we see something, we hear something, we smell something, we taste something, we touch something, or we think about something. The object arises in our mind continuum. And then we label it, or we value it in a certain way. We judge it. We judge it as pleasant or unpleasant. And it's amazing how the exact same object can be experienced as pleasant or unpleasant. The same person can experience the same thing as pleasant or unpleasant just at different times. Or two people can be looking at the exact same thing and one experiences it as pleasant and the other experiences it as unpleasant. So you can see there's a judgment process involved. And that judgment is arising because it is arising and passing away, and it's a very quick process, this arising and passing away. It takes a lot of careful awareness and also of concentration of the mind, or calm and peace and stillness of the mind, to pick up the flux, the natural flux that exists in all objects, to be both in the experiencing of the object and the perception of the object. So the object itself is arising and passing away, and the experience, the person perceiving it, is also, their perception is arising and passing away. So with this, there's a kind of a quick fix that the mind comes to. It jumps to a conclusion, a judgment, that the thing is pleasant or unpleasant, whereas in reality the thing is just as it is. And it doesn't necessarily have a quality of pleasant or unpleasantness. That quality is added by the mind as a judgment. So, for instance, if I see a chocolate cake, I might decide to myself that that's pleasant, or I might decide that it's unpleasant. And I could decide that it's unpleasant because I've already eaten chocolate cake and I don't feel like having any more chocolate cake. Or I might be hungry and I might see the chocolate cake and I might decide that that's delicious and it's very pleasant. So the exact same object, the chocolate cake, can have a quality of pleasant or unpleasant depending on the subject's, the perceiver's own condition of mind. But in reality, it's just a chocolate cake. In reality, the person is just seeing the chocolate cake. And in reality, they're adding a judgment of like or unlike or pleasant or unpleasant to the object of the chocolate cake. So this is the origination of desire. That desire is just arising, and it arises very naturally, and we add these judgments. So anger, false speech, and perplexity, these things too arise when that dyad exists. I mean, when this dyad, meaning whenever we have this basically choice to label something, to judge something as pleasant or unpleasant, as long as we are judging things, as long as we label things pleasant or unpleasant, we will have anger, false speech, and perplexity. And then the Buddha specifically mentions that one perplexed should train on the path of knowledge, having known the ascetic stated these things. So here again, we have three conditions, really. We have pleasant, unpleasant, and neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So this can be perceived in anger, we say, oh, I don't like that. And false speech is something like, yeah, it's really delicious, when I don't really mean it's really delicious. And perplexity is, you know, whatever. It's all the same. When something may not be all the same, you know, something may be beneficial or not beneficial. Something may be skillful or not skillful. Whereas perplexity will be, it's all the same and it doesn't matter and there's no difference. It's an inability to distinguish. And one of the hallmarks and qualities of wisdom is that it distinguishes, it can distinguish. It can see that there's a subject. It sees there's an object. It knows things as they really are. It knows a chocolate cake is a chocolate cake. It's not necessarily a pleasant or an unpleasant chocolate cake. And, it, you know, that wisdom is knowing, oh, I feel hungry or I am rather full. So I don't feel like chocolate cake right now, or I'm really ravenous to have chocolate cake, and how this is skewing my judgment and perception of the same chocolate cake. So perplexity is, oh, it's all the same, and, you know, very delusional state of mind. And if one is deluded, then this is a very difficult state of mind to educate or to teach or to train or to cultivate wisdom in. So anger has sees the fault or the flaw in something. So to some degree, anger has energy. Anger sees the flaw, and wisdom also has energy, and wisdom also sees the flaw. And the distinguishment is that anger is sort of bouncing off of the thing. It's not able to penetrate with wisdom and insight into the nature of the object or the relationship between the object and the person perceiving the object. So that is anger, but it's close to wisdom, and to some degree, anger can be a basis for wisdom if you're able to transform the anger. But perplexity is very delusional. You know, it's very, very hard for a person who's completely perplexed or blur or, you know, tuned out, not interested. It's very hard for them to cultivate their mind. And false speech is, again, related to delusion. It could be just simply, false speech can come up in all kinds of ways where we say, oh, it doesn't really matter, you know, and it's sort of diminishing something that is significant, for instance. That can be false speech. In particular, false speech is referring to lying and slandering and divisive speech, but also it can be just backbiting and kind of gossiping. But internally in the mind, everything kind of begins with this quality of speech, where we direct our mind towards an object, or we direct our mind away from an object, or we sustain our mind on the object. So this is called vitaka and vichara. So this kind of inner speech of the mind is very important. And when we have falsity of speech, then that can also reflect in our own inner speech. So speech is considered very, very important within the Buddhist teachings, that we have straight speech, we have correct speech, because we're aligning our external speech with our internal speech, and speech is very close to the nature of the mind. So falsity of speech is to be avoided, because we're giving our own mind the wrong instructions. So perplexity is particularly highlighted here by the Buddha, because it's very difficult. You really have to arouse great effort if there's perplexity and doubt. And you know, it's notable that the first stage of enlightenment is overcoming perplexity about the teachings itself. So doubt is eradicated by the teaching. Doubt about the path, doubt about the teacher, and so forth is eradicated in the first enlightenment step. So this perplexity is not a huge hurdle in many ways. For instance, anger is only banished by the third stage of enlightenment at Anagami, whereas perplexity is banished by the first stage of enlightenment. So perplexity is nevertheless like in a way the biggest problem, because that's the one that everybody has to get over the first threshold. Once you get over perplexity, you can work your way towards getting over anger. But nevertheless, you know, so we need to train hard on the path of knowledge to overcome our perplexity. So maybe we can listen to Mahatero and what he has to say about these two questions. questions and answers by the Buddha.
So when you are citing the chocolate cake, I was so delicious. But it was so late for me to understand anorexia and bulimia. So only thanks to Diana, I came to know the disease called bulimia. Eating, no end. And then vomiting and again eating. And I don't know, please correct me if I am wrong. In the Roman palace, there's a room called vomitorium. You can go there and vomit and come back and again eat. And then the other part is anorexia. Anorexia, we get the very good smell of the food, you get vomitish feeling. Because you want to get slim. You hate nourishing and carbohydrate full food. Anorexia. Yeah. So then when it is hearing, I put myself, I was a bulimian type. I eat 5 times a day, eating like and working like anything. My mother is so happy being a boy by eating, and you get a good body shape and good buttocks and all the kind of thing. These are highlighted in our family values. And mother is so unhappy because she can't feed me enough. So I used to go to the close by houses and help them, and they give enough eating for parties and weddings and you know, the harvesting day. Collective works give enough food. So I am very famous. I have a few families. I am going there. I never heard about anorexia. And one day I read the YouTube. And there I found there are some people, they think about the shanky legs, slim body, and they say this is the most attractive. This is usually for the females, young, adolescents. So then I thought, what the kind of thing, because I am completely other way around. And one person live in this room, he was a fat person. You know, in Sinhala we call Mahatya. Have you heard about Mahatma Gandhi? Mahatma is a big soul, Mahatya. So he's a fat, people call Mahata. Mahata is a fat fellow. So he somehow the other managed not to eat in the night. But his wife is telling he is suffering. As children, some of them are in America, some of them are running a studio. So he asked them, why don't your father come and live with us in the home? Then I told, why not you go there and you can have, because you are a mature person. He used to sit on this the staircase early morning after the meal, sitting there. So happy. And his uncle is the person who built this monastery. But he can't see any destruction here because he feel. He says, that's my weakness. So when he go home, in night, wife prepare very, very good food and bring the food there and here. So ultimately he is titillated to eat. Now he hate the wife, he hate the food, but he eats. So then I learn the anorexia. He's a fat fellow, as far as the meditation concerned, not to eat after the breakfast, after the meal, after the midday. But his wife is willing to come home and share with us family members, have the dinner. And she prepared a very smelly kind of thing. Smelly means very tasty, smelly. And she said, I am titillated. And he hate going home. He hate his wife. He hate this good food. I was thinking, in a perplexity. I can't think. Because I am definitely for food. No mercy. Food means luxury. Food means treatment. But the Diana also in my side. Eating. But anorexia. You use the term anorexia for self-mortification, kind of a broader view. But I learned the term anorexia is hating nourishable and tasty food, because they are happy with the shanky legs and the slim body. And most of the Sri Lankan migrants in Melbourne, their children is having this disease given by the peer group. They are not eating. Parents are trying to give, but they are selective. And they think that you all are greedy fellows, eating. I am thinking about my slanky legs and the slim body, and you all are not supporting. You see, same chocolate cake. If you have bulimia, it's a gift. But if you have anorexia, you hate cake, you hate cake-eating people, you hate the color, you hate the taste. But the cake is the cake. I'm not fighting with you. I'm telling exactly what you are telling. Understand? So, now I'm going to give you attention to the Concept and Reality book, Venerable Jnanananda's book. I managed to get his interpretation, page number 134, somewhat related but not exactly the person, from a study of the context in which the above verse of the Kalavivada Sutta is found, it would seem that the verse gives the final solution to the problem posed. In the first verse of that sutta, whence do spring up the contentions and disputes, lamentation and sorrow, together with envy, the arrogance, the conceit, together with slander? Where do these springs up? Pray, tell me this. That's 820, the numbering is different, Sanghitanikaya. The ultimate source of this cutter, C-U-T-E-R, cuter. And inner conflict is, the outer and inner conflict is gradually laid bare as the sutta unfolds itself in the form of a dialogue. The link in the casual chain, linear chain, are the follows. Kalavivada, the dispute, or contentions and the disputes. Parideva soka, lamentation and sorrow. Macha, the envy. Manatimana, arrogance and conceit. And pesuna, slander. This is the first cause. What is the cause of Kalavivada? He says, pia. Things considered dear, desirable things. And asa, expectation and fulfillment, nitta. The Kalavivada is basically due to pia, asa, nitta. Pia. Kalavivada is due to pia, apya, you mean satang, asatang, desirable and undesirable. And chanda is the desire and the vinichaya, judgment, koda, anger. Mosavajja, falsehood, and katankata, doubts. Satang asatang, pleasant and unpleasant. Vibhavancha bhavacha, non-existence of the existence, and the passa. Passa is the base for everything. Sense impressions, patigancha, grappings, manner, the matters, and the egotism. And nama rupa, ultimately come back to the name and the form, icha, wish, and the sukha dukkha. So what I am going to say is, even if you refuse the kalavivada, debate and arrogance, you never refuse liking and disliking. Liking and disliking considers a culture. No one can find fault with it. It is not a mistake. But from this mere kalahavivada, mere liking and disliking, so much of bad thing happens. Arrogance, fighting, and self-centeredness, everything. So this thing is called the vitakka vichara. You can have your own internal chatter. You can have the external chatter, constructive chatter, and the destructive chatter. Everything is because liking and disliking. So, mindfulness is labeled as choiceless awareness. So you have to be mindful, you have to be an enlightened. So that gave me a break in Nilambe. Because at that time I am full of desire. I am undergraduate and definitely science degree. I know future. So that everyone is already graduated. They are simply white-clad fellows. This is simple living, high thinking. You are the only young man participating in us. Can you share with us the choiceless awareness? I mean, have meal or not meal, have a girl or not girl, having a girl, having a job or not, having marriage or not, having ordained or not. So I had the desire for food, I had the desire for girls, I had the desire for the monkhood, I had the desire for learning, all the kind of thing. So I was arguing again and again with Venerable Dhammika. Then I told Bhante, this is myself, it's a cut across, it's a cross section. He says, meditate as a layperson till you feel ordained or non-ordained is equal. Still I remember. One day, so then I went to American Rahula, the Yogavachara Rahula. Then I told Bhante, I disappointed in the job and I am so happy with the becoming a monk. But the job people says, don't quit. There are 350 families depending upon you. You are a top class CEO and the top manager. Don't give up. Don't get discouraged. Please come back. But this is the only chance I am if I am to quit. What do you say? He was so sarcastic about me. He was looking at me like a rattlesnake or the rat snake. Come into his house. He says, you are boosting yourself. Please quit. They will find a very good manager. In Sri Lanka is quite a literate country. Do you think that without you that they can't run it? No, you are not prepared. Your mind is not strong. Be mindful. So I was completely collapsed. I thought that I am a graduate coming from the third world country and meditating, and I thought that he will tell something positive about the Karunaratna. Never. Then I went to the other person. He says, that's the way he analyzed it. He says, I am foolish. I am not prepared for the monkhood. That's why I am asking for this and that. So after 30 years, he came to the same place and I told him, no, I can't remember. Even Venerable Dhammika says, I can't remember. But I can remember. The choiceless awareness. So still I am in the same trouble. Country is in trouble. And the monkhood and the forest monks, no one consider. The monks means different name for Sri Lanka. And traveling is difficulty. Mindful school is progressing. How to do? So still the liking and disliking, still the choice is there. So many people, if you honestly come and ask, do you have a choice or not? Then I say, I'm sorry. As a competent authority, as a leader of Nisarnavaniya and Kadvila, I have some choice. But I know it. I just explain it through the constitution and I express you. That is to get rid of choices. Have an appointment with to have a disappointment. So therefore, even I am losing my choice, I don't care because I am trying my best to be happy, prepare the mindset. I have a desire, I have a goal. I know it is utter disappointment. No harm. I am a fully active person. No one can explain why I am so busy. I never waste even a single minute. Working like bulimia. Eating. But I try my best. Kalavivada is the best because we are going to come to that particular stanza. This book is highly appreciating it. For that only is preparing the ground. So it says we are debating, we are arguing, we are chatting and conversation and dialogue means kalaha. Any dialogue. Sri Lankan best telephone system is called dialogue. Future is today. That's areas. Without areas, your suffering will come to the present moment for the tomorrow suffering also. They are so happy. And I also have one sim. Dialogue sim. We get Wi-Fi, we get telephone calls, we get everything. And it's like a poisoned arrow. Wherever I go, they come. Because I am the person paying for the chip. Dialogue. Kalaha vivada. So by kalavivada, are we understanding, are we keeping the choiceless awareness in front, or we are going to win the kalaha, win the argument, win the dialogue. Winning means you are selfish. You boosting your ego. Politicians never can think about. I don't claim that politicians are not mindful. They are mindful sometimes. But the politics means, good or bad, you have to win. So it's a jargon. It's an articulation of words, and all politicians, all missionary works, utter bullshit. They have nothing inside, and they are just arguing. So people understand they are selflessly arguing, telling they are for the country, they are for the patriotism, nonsense. They are poorly behind money, but that is also not giving what is necessary for them. But they keep it. But the conspiracy theory says they are not even behind money. They are not for a religion. They say they are not happy. Other people are living happily. Other people are intelligently advanced. They wanted to keep the reptilian mind. They wanted to keep everything as the fighting dinosaurs. That is what the conspiracy, and that is also not palatable. It gave a lot of information, just like bulimia and just like anorexia and just like churchless awareness. So I keep my plate open. And I say, this is my desire, yes, I like books, I like the iron pieces, tools, yes, even broken away iron. So last time when we are preparing the jetty in the Kalniganga, we had a lot of iron frames, everything rotten. So yesterday I went there and collected each and every, because now iron is very expensive. So I collected and kept in one place because I feel that iron is carbon. Iron is burn of oxygen. So why don't you keep it? So everyone is not happy with iron. Everyone is not happy with the books. But the book thing is now slowly, slowly reducing in me. But the desire for iron and for the anvil, for the Danduanduara Magadigyan, how do you call the? These things are making my life so organized. You know, anvil, how to beat the iron pieces and how to press together. Eh? Wise, not W. Eh?
Sounds like it. And for single E's, yes.
That is V-I-C-E. So it is, for me, it is W-I-C-E-like, W-I-S-C-like, wise. So I bought two sets, and wherever I go to the workplace, whenever the anvil is available, when the vice is available, I am the king. I don't have any fear for the iron. So that is kind of a desire. So I ask young children, when they come to the Satipasala, do you like iron work? What do you mean, Bante iron? Please come. This is what? There are fireplaces, heating iron and chopping and all the kind of thing. So they take the saw for the iron, cut all the woods and the saw is finished. And they are wasting it. Then I feel very happy. Because in my young age, I never had that kind of a chance. They are doing all the wastage of good equipments, sometimes damaging them. So I just observe. I keep them and observe. Exactly the same, my young age. Exactly the same. They never talk with me then onward. But they have never seen such a thing. And they are happy. And mother is coming and waiting. Father is coming and waiting. Grandmother is coming. But they, you see, they are in heaven. Because they are desire. So as far as I say, what I am going to say is, as far as you know, you are with this desire, others will sympathize you. You have to tell. Yes, 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 I am biased. I am biased to that. But I am trying my best to be aware, choicelessly. One day that too has to give up. No problem. So that is what I would like to share with you. I like other non-Irish, non-Irish voices. Ah, yes, American.
Well, this, what you're all talking about and the Buddha was saying is about... desire and aversion being sort of linked, and how they cause all the disputes and cause all our problems, and then what I also hearing is that that those things are, the desire is so elusive and so changing that if we just pay attention to it, you can see how quickly it changes. So it's a really amazing the way we're stuck with desire and aversion, but it changes so quickly that there's nothing really to hold on to if you don't get caught by it and get. I think people just get habituated into feeling anger and desire, and it's just the way of the world. So we fall into it and believe in it, but it's really nothing there.
I think that is what Sigmund Freud mentioned about the libido. We are run by our own desire, libido, id, libido, and superego. So libido is no male, female. Everyone is the same. Any other American voice? Do you have anything to say?
I did want to say thank you for the good comments, Bhante. I did want to say that when I was a layperson in particular, I would see kind of these debates about, what kind of tradition in Buddhism is better, like the Thai Forest tradition or this tradition or that tradition. I would see this a lot with lay people, and I think that kind of ties into like the aversion and desire and, you know, and everybody's like trying to approach the same kind of goal, and there would be these kinds of debates. I would see this with like other lay people. They would kind of debate about which tradition is better and this and that. And, you know, we see that a lot in the world, even like which cup of coffee is better, you know, which cup of tea is better, what flavor is better, you know.
What about green tea?
Yeah.
Good.
So, yeah. Yeah, definitely aversion and desire underlining those things, you know, a lot of that.
Likewise, thank you everyone for the comments, Bhantes and Venerable. I think even with just a little experience in the world, people can understand how from things that we like and dislike, a whole kind of chain of desire, anger, falsehoods, doubts, and things can arise and lead to even worse situations and arguments. I think kind of the experience of pleasure in the world and the wanting to grasp onto that leads to this very deep kind of anger when one loses it. And it can lead to these different things when one tries to get it back. And eventually it kind of takes wisdom to see how it was the very kind of chasing after the pleasure that led to all those unwholesome states and the running away from the displeasure. And I think, it kind of goes to show the Buddha's wisdom in teaching a path that goes beyond all of it while still working with it and not kind of ignoring these things, but definitely the dark chain that leads to quarrels and disputes. It's very easy to get caught into when you don't have mindfulness of the pleasant and the unpleasant and what they actually do to kind of disturb the mind in whichever way it points to. So that's all.
So I would like to say, together with mindfulness, we must have this kind of a open discussion. Then we can highlight something, we can pinpoint someone's weakness, we can pinpoint someone's abilities, skillfulness, and mercilessly, selflessly we are sharing, if we are, dialogue, that will give kind of a boost, not to hide yourself, but to not only be mindful, but to be wise to share it each other. Thank you.
Avsarai Bhante, Avsarai, all the venerables. We started with chocolate cake, and then it came to the methods of meditation, and then Bhante touched upon even in the practice, we will have liking and disliking, so therefore it's a snake that comes behind even without our knowledge. And the last report that the presenter was producing at the very beginning was indirectly mentioning the same thing. He's having some experiences, and even without his knowledge, there are some likings and disliking to what is happening. So before Buddha, what we basically had was holding on to what we like and without allowing the disliking to appear. So what Buddha did was taking the mindfulness to the fore, he just allowed us to see our own liking and disliking and our own fight even after coming from the sensual world to the spiritual world. So just accepting that our own fight, as Bhante mentioned, is the only way out for the ultimate happiness, as I feel. So that's the comment I want to add. Thank you.
Thank you. Italy, you have no comments?
It's okay. I just wanted to say one more sentence, if that's okay. I think also a lot of things, like when we grasp so hard to something and someone kind of presents a different viewpoint or something, I'm speaking from my own personal experience in the past, long ago, it was almost like a personal attack. That's kind of what people take it as, you know. It's like, you know, I like something, you don't like it, so it's like a personal attack on me. And really, it's not that at all. It's just somebody presenting a different viewpoint, you know. So
I think that quality is now increasing. Even the young children, they can agree to disagree. Earlier, there is no chance. If you disagree, you are an enemy. No talk. Don't give. Don't, I don't like your view. But now they can live. And the family is my husband and wife not liking each other, but still they are running the family. This is agree to disagree, sometimes maybe due to the children. And that is happening. And living together, it's a new concept. And in the classroom, every teacher knows children are hating them. It's a very common thing, but still they go prepared for the class and tell them some of the other jokes and kind of thing, find fault with the parents and kind of, then the teachers become very popular. I mean, that's a simple art. So that's the way, that's an accepted thing. Otherwise, how can you say that tuition master is the best teacher? No tension, no frustration. School teacher full of tension, full of frustration. Sunday school teacher full of tension, full of frustration. Pirivena teacher full of tension, full of frustration. Education ministry, everyone tension and frustration. But the tuition master, taking money also in Sri Lanka, everything is free. But he is popular. And over there, teacher children not learn, but they know how to love each other, have love affairs. That's why they are going to the private classes. And now it's even the Sunday school you can't have because children come and says, Bhante, till 9 o'clock I can have, 9 o'clock I have a tuition class. So the teacher says, Bhante, we are doing all free. We are talking, going to give the how do you call, the sadachari, no, moral time. But they happy to go to the, you know, why? Because the tuition master knows how to attract children, collect money. But you fellows not teaching mindfulness. Now, tuition masters are asking, Bhante, what about teaching us mindfulness? And I do, why not? Because many children definitely go to tuition classes. You can teach them mindfulness. So mindfulness give a kind of a cut across. The teacher's tension, parents' tension, child's hate, and tuition master's love. But anyway, the mindfulness can go like a thread. So therefore, the mindfulness is having, I am not telling it is the ultimatum, but to start with, is giving a kind of a gloss over. or you try to give a plastering about the problem, we get a new stage whereby you can rethink, understand the parents are in frustration, teachers are in frustration, politicians are in frustration, police is in frustration, education ministry is frustration, but still they allow jobs. So this is very common, very accepted thing in the even in social media. So that is a kind of evolution due to the artificial intelligence, due to the communication. People are ready to accept the how to agree to disagree. I think that's a good way of feature in our time regarding discussions.
I think having come from a young generation and still being in it, I have some recent experience, and the kind of new fashion of kind of getting along, and everyone kind of seeing the similarities between each other has, of course, a lot of benefits. And I think that with wisdom, it can lead to a very good and kind of prosperous generation. But at the same time, without that wisdom, it's quite dangerous, because one thing that I've seen almost all youth agree on is the seek for fun and pleasure at any cost. And so what I saw is a lot of people, they would kind of come together and be able to agree on single things, which is just basically sensual pleasures. And that's what kind of most people would agree on. And so if we can have that new kind of attitude of agreeing to disagree, but still using wisdom to know actually what's beneficial and what's not, then it can lead to very good. And if we don't, then it can lead to harm, because the kind of the heaviest and most weighty similarity between all beings is our ignorance and our craving. And so if we all agree on those things together, then the world will keep going in that direction. So I'm very grateful to be around people who are going in the other direction and to be working towards that, because that's what we need to agree on the most. Thank you.
So that is why we are having English medium discussion. No two one is same in the same idea. Many, many diversified ideas, but still 1 hour we are sitting. We are fighting. I fight exactly same in the animals in a group. When they are living, they have to put up with undesirable thing, but still they are in the group. The monkeys and kind of, they are always culprits. They are not fellows, but still they can't leave the group. So leader is always looking at, but he is the essential part and partial in the group. So likewise, wherever the foreigners are there, we are having kind of a full meal diet. As you like, you can share yourself. And so I learned it, of course, Nisanamani was the same from the beginning. So when I was in Panditarama, so much of people, they have no idea about Buddhism. They don't know how to wear. They know how to worship this thing. But Sayadaw is a full traditional. So a few days' time, they say, your way is okay. But if you, as far as you are in Myanmar, as far as you are in the monastery, please. That's, always close your knees. Don't expose knees. And you must be white clad. Likewise, and ultimately they agree. They become accepting. So there was one Vietnamese monk, and he says how to open an umbrella. Just before going to the Pindapatha, he told, please, it's a very young monk, and I was very senior, and he's demonstrating how to open an umbrella. He says slowly, mindfully, silently, otherwise you will break the umbrella. It's given by the center. So you have to understand, this is such a poor country. Not in any other place on the earth won't give a torch, the thermos flask, an umbrella, and everything as a part and parcel of the room. But please use it. So next day I ask, each year, can you do it without becoming boring? It's a very young, very pleasant, thin monk teaching about 100 yogis and the monks how to open and how to go into the dining hall, remove your slippers, and wear the slippers pointed for the dining hall. Keep it in an orderly manner. And when you come back, don't rush. Keep in it. Then I told, I don't feel boring. No, but they tell you something. The way they adopt into next day. Otherwise, we feel like you are coming from the zoo. They're behaving in a such a rascal way. But the soon you explain, next day, these people come according. This is such a beautiful thing. But otherwise, we can say, this bugger, he do not know how to pay the respect to the Buddha, how to sit in front of the sadhu. But they don't know. You have to tell them without considering just a general advice. And many, and that is exactly thing happen when we go to the prison. And the utmost murderers, they are so sensitive, if you tell something touchy, they start crying. We thought they will come take a knife and stab you. No. And drug addicted people. And abused children. Very difficult to touch them. And if you are touching, the mindfulness is the balm. When we give, don't worry about it. You are not a criminal. You are a human. As far as you can sit, as far as you can walk, as far as you know you are walking, that's the biggest. They start crying. Because no one is telling, thinking even, to give mindfulness to them. They give a number instead of the name. They give a plate. You go on the plate and serve yourself and eat. And so much people looking around him as a culprit. But no one says, still being a prisoner, in prison, you can be mindful. Even you are a prostitute. A lot of girls are coming from the sauna. Makadikane sauna altar, sauna bath. They don't know what they are doing. Ultimately, police and catch them and put into the kaduela. They're beautiful girls. This is Bhante. We have done the wrong thing. We don't know. That is a social situation. We are very young girls from the house and we got money. And now we are in mindfulness. What a blessing. It's a punishment. What a blessing. Please let us come whenever necessary. And the Montessori teachers, they are also beautiful young girls. And this is Bhante, from morning to evening, we are having such a fight because one boy or girl is enough for whole family. But they are looking after 30 odd. So we are in such a stress. But together with the children and the teachers, be mindful. You won't believe, one teacher has organized a Zoom class for grade age 5 children. From morning 4 to 5, daily houseful. In Zoom, 100 children come and they are sitting. When Dhammavihari is giving, he says, I can't believe, Bandev, can you give me more facilities for 300 children? Because Zoom is allowing only 100 children and it's houseful. No one think such a difficult situation, mindfulness can be applied. But apply and see the way they catch, unbelievable. So there, it is a message for the mindful master, trainers. It's a blessing. It is not outdated, fresh. Okay, now it's time up, Sudhu Amduru. Thank you very much for all the opinions. So that's the end of the discussion. We are going to go for Pindapath.